From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas, sitting in for John Horn. On today's show, Spotify has started paying advances to some artists, but the music streaming company says it's not signing artists the traditional way. So what's that mean for the music industry? Also, Charlotte Gainsbourg is on tour with a batch of new songs and some old ones, including a controversial duet she originally recorded with her dad.
He made me sing as a 15-year-old, and I can't say those words again. And the only songs that truly I still love are the duos. And the thing is, when I sing them, I can hear him.
All that coming up on The Frame. The music streaming service Spotify went public in April and earlier today released its second ever earnings report. But it's not the only news Spotify's been making. The company is also stirring up a bit of controversy by actively seeking out and inking deals with new unsigned artists, but insisting it's not interested in becoming a conventional music label. We gave a call to Bloomberg Entertainment reporter Lucas Shaw to find out if any of this may signal a sea change in how music streaming services do business. He began, though, by breaking down Spotify's financial performance.
Investors have had a hard time figuring out Spotify's first couple quarters of financial results, which is kind of odd because Spotify has done a very good job of forecasting and projecting what it's going to report. Spotify fell in pre-market trading today, I think because the advertising-supported users, the free users, growth there had stagnated, and also because the ad revenue generated was less than some analysts had hoped for. But by the time that Spotify's top executives were done speaking with analysts, the stock had rebounded, and now in trading on Thursday, the stock is up because Spotify reported more paid users than anybody had predicted. And that's the most important part of Spotify's business. It makes 90% of its revenue from people who pay a monthly fee and just 10% from advertising.
Well, in today's call with reporters, Spotify CEO confirmed that the company is paying advances to artists, and that may discourage them from signing with a label. How is this any different from them having a label and signing artists themselves?
So what a record label does when it signs an artist is it will typically give an advance that will pay for that artist to work on some songs and record the album. In most cases, the record label then takes ownership of the music that comes from that advance, with the artist still getting a share of future earnings. You know, the artist basically has to pay back the advance, and then the two sides split what comes of it. Really big artists will be able to control their masters, but for the most part, the value of a record label is in that library that they're sitting on. Spotify has no interest, or at least it says it has no interest, in owning music. It just wants to have all the music on its service, but it's also okay if that music is elsewhere. What Spotify is trying to do with some of these advances and some of the licensing deals with different artists is say, okay, here's some money for you to go and do what you're going to do, and maybe don't sign with a record label, because the record labels take such a large percentage of Spotify's revenue that if Spotify can cut them out of the picture and sign a direct deal with the artist, Spotify's thinking is that the artist will keep more and Spotify will keep more, so everybody will benefit except for these middlemen.
Well, what kind of artists is Spotify approaching? I mean, who's attractive to them? Is it an artist who is not currently signed to any label?
For now, it's artists that you and I have never heard of. There are people who are pretty small early in their career. My understanding is Spotify is only paying out, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 advances, which the big artists will get $5, $10, $15 million record deals. Spotify would love it if a Drake or a Post Malone decided to just completely forego a label deal and go straight through them. The moment that happens, they're probably going to be in an all-out war with the music industry.
But is it really in a position to develop an artist and support that artist if they really blow up?
You know, Spotify doesn't have a big enough team in place to perform that function, but I think they're hoping that a lot of those artists can use these tools that Spotify is providing to make decisions, and that technology will ultimately replace some of the human function.
Isn't it just a matter of time, though, before streaming services like Spotify get more involved in signing, growing, and promoting artists?
Well, streaming services are already getting more involved in working with artists in certain ways. You'll see them mount promotional campaigns around new songs or albums. They are already giving them data to help them inform what songs they should play when they tour or where they should tour. Spotify has these Spotify Studios events. At least I would be surprised if you saw some of Spotify's competitors ever sign an artist. I just don't know that that's something that's, say, in Apple's DNA or Pandora or YouTube. They're going to go right up to that line, but in a lot of these cases, they're contractually prohibited from actually signing an artist.
It's been reported also that Spotify's algorithm recommends way more male artists than female artists. Could that carry over at all to the way they may, for lack of a better term, sign artists?
Sexism is a huge problem in the music industry. It's one of the reasons that there was just the change at the head of the Recording Academy, which is the group that gives out the Grammys. There was a feeling that not enough women were being nominated and not enough women were performing at the event. I think it's no surprise that algorithms designed by male engineers may be biased towards the tastes of those male engineers. But whether that's going to bleed into Spotify's work with artists, it really depends on how far Spotify takes that work.
We spoke with you when YouTube was launching its music service earlier this year. Any sense of how they're faring so far?
It has just recently rolled out for a mass audience, so we're looking at best a month or two of data. Anecdotally, YouTube is putting a lot of money behind the marketing, but it'll probably be another several months before we have any sense of how it's doing in terms of numbers. And of course, YouTube is not going to report that. We'll just have to base it on talking to sources at different music companies.
And what about the artist's own streaming service, Tidal? They've done app updates and redesigns in order to stay competitive. Are they staying afloat? How's business?
Anybody in the music industry you talk to speaks of it as though it's sort of inevitable that this will eventually close. Jay-Z and Beyonce, who are two of the owners, released their album exclusively on Tidal for a hot second and then shifted it to all the major streaming services, which has really been the track record now with Tidal. Its advantage was supposed to be exclusive access to music from its owners and from these big artists, but those artists don't want their music to only be on Tidal because there's so few people there to listen to it.
That's Lucas Shaw. He's an entertainment reporter for Bloomberg News, and he's based in Los Angeles. Lucas, thanks for being with us.
Great to be back.
Coming up, singer and actress Charlotte Gainsbourg is the offspring of two French cultural icons, a legacy she now fully embraces. At age 47, actress and musician Charlotte Gainsbourg has already spent more than 30 years on stage and screen, mostly screen. She's appeared in dozens of films, including some daring and downright dangerous lead performances in Lars von Trier's Antichrist and Nymphomaniac. Over the past several months, though, she's been concentrating more on the music, touring across Europe and the U.S. in support of her latest album titled Rest. The album was in production when her older sister, Kate Berry, died from an apparent suicide. Gainsbourg responded by rewriting much of the album to reflect and channel her grief. Rest also touches on the loss of her father, the celebrated singer Serge Gainsbourg, who passed away in 1991 and was a major catalyst in his daughter's development as a young artist. Charlotte and Serge caused a sensation in France in the 1980s when they recorded a number of sultry, suggestive duets together, including one called Lemon Incest and this one called Charlotte Forever, which she recently began performing live for the first time.
Charlotte.
I never listened to my father, never. But I know the songs, his voice, the way he sang them by heart. Because I used to listen to him while he was alive. I listened to his music all the time. It's a bit strange, but my mother's songs, my father's songs, all the time.
You had no choice.
Well, as a teenager, I guess I could have gone in other directions and made a small revolution, but not at all. I was a great admirer. So anyway, it's very, very familiar. His intonations are so familiar, but I hate the way I sing.
Approche-toi.
it was something I felt so ashamed at the time. I was embarrassed. I took myself very seriously, and I can hear it. Lemon and Cess is much more innocent, and I didn't know what I was doing, and it was. I love hearing that song again.
Being in the studio with your father and working on these songs, was that something that you wanted to do, that he wanted to do, that you both wanted to do?
I have no idea. He didn't ask me if I wanted a record. He just made it. The music was his world, so I entered his world. And the recording of that album only took 5 days for me. It was just going in, doing two songs a day and leaving. And I didn't even promote the album afterwards because I didn't like doing it. And he let me do whatever I wanted. But then doing the film...
Charlotte Forever, the film.
Yeah, that was different because it was as if I had my own persona with films, which had nothing to do with my parents. And suddenly he was entering that world.
Your world.
Yes. I didn't like that. It was a tricky time, but today I'm so thankful that I had that experience with him.
Yeah. You've only recently begun performing the song Charlotte Forever regularly in concert, I think starting last year, and you sing both your and your father's parts, and it's really wonderful, and it takes on a whole new life. Why did you want to start performing it now?
So, of course, I listened to my first album with my father, and I thought, all the lyrics are so, it's off. He made me sing as a 15-year-old, and I can't say those words again. And the only songs that truly I still love are the duos. So it seemed impossible at the time to do these songs. And then with this album, Rest, I felt... I didn't care as much if I was a real performer or not. So anyway, I started having much more fun, and the experiences were each time I sort of treasured each experience. So I was able to think, well, why not try a duo? And so I asked myself, should I not sing his part, have a male voice sing his part, or yes, silence? Or, and then I tried it myself, and of course it's a different register because one part is more talking and the other one is in a high-pitched voice, so it worked. The thing is, when I sing them, I can hear him.
Right.
Not trying to sing like him, but that's the voice I want to hear.
And somehow he sort of comes through you, if that makes sense.
That's what I feel, so that's wonderful. If people can have a glimpse of that, that's cool.
Well, I'm wondering, actually, though, what do you think you learned from him as a musician?
Everything, and at the same time, not enough. Not enough to ask questions, not enough to observe him. And he was so modest in the sense that he didn't show off as an artist or, you know, give me lessons of how I should do stuff. It was more to do with aesthetics than with the music. So he did give me lessons on taste. But... for music, he made me listen to Chopin, to Bach, to Dylan, Elvis, and that's it.
Were there things that you wanted to listen to or that you were listening to that did not meet his approval?
Yes.
like what?
I loved Aznavour.
The French singer Charles Aznavour. Vers les docks où le poids et l'ennui
me courbe le dos. And it's not that he disliked Aznavour, it's just that he was jealous. So he didn't like the fact that I was such an admirer of someone else's music. But and a Frenchman, that was the point. But if not, yes, I think he sort of, do you say vetoed? Vetoed. Some childish singers that he couldn't deal with. But apart from that, no, he was also very open to what young people wanted to listen to. So he sort of listened to what my taste was about also. And he was he had this wonderful thing of starting out a record, composing melodies. That was the starting point. And he had a piano that would repeat, you know, that would play on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So he would record himself and then he would play me, my mother and his artistic director, his songs. But I was really young and he wanted me to put stars for the songs I preferred and then stars on the titles I preferred. And then the lyrics he didn't show me. But so he was very open to whatever. He trusted me.
Well, why don't we hear Lying With You from the new record, Rest, and then we can talk some more. Lying With You from our guest Charlotte Gainsbourg from the new album Rest. Tell me about this song and its content and how it came about.
It's one of the first songs I wrote, not really being very sure of myself lyric-wise, but it's about him on his deathbed.
Your father?
My father, yeah. Because that's the way I saw him last, which seems a little weird, but I needed a few days lying with him.
He died at home.
Yeah, he died at home in his bed, and that's the way I described him in the song. And I needed to be just very crude. I wanted to do a love song, you know, to tell how much I loved him, but it came out that way, in a dark, not dark, but very real. And with the choruses, I was able to be much softer and more sentimental.
Mm.
But I liked this this balance between the lyrics being a little dark and the music very often energetic. I needed that opposition.
Rest is sung almost entirely in French, while your prior three albums were mostly in English. So
yes.
Is there any reason why? Is it because you ended up writing most of the lyrics and that's your native tongue and it just, the words come easier?
Exactly. I think it came out, it was much more obvious in French. Very often the French was a way of being very direct and sincere and very personal, and the English was more fun and it was more lively and more rhythmical, of course, so mm-hmm. It was it made sense that the choruses would come in English and the French was more of, you know, my true language.
And now, back to my conversation with actress and musician Charlotte Gainsbourg. Her latest album is called Rest. It deals in part with the loss of her sister, the fashion photographer Kate Berry, who took her own life in 2013. In the wake of the tragedy, she explains why she decided to leave France and relocate to New York City.
What I was running away from was were all my memories, because I live in France. I live next door to where I was brought up by my father and my mother and living with my sister. So I needed to escape that environment. In New York, it was just, I just needed to feel a foreigner, to feel that nobody knew me, nobody knew what had happened, because in Paris, everyone knew. It was sort of a public thing. So I didn't go to New York to record an album. I just didn't really care about that at the time. But once I was there, I think I didn't have any friends in New York. It was just my family and that work, that project. Mm.
And how did Kate's passing, your sister Kate, her passing and your grief inform West?
I think that's the only thing I could talk about. Once she died, I didn't want to talk about something else. And I had different ways of talking about it. Like, you know, Les Oxalis is a ballad in the cemetery, and Kate is a song really about her and what I'm missing.
Yes.
But I didn't want to make a sad record. I really didn't want sad lyrics on a sad music. I needed to express what I had to say, but with sort of something to protect me of being so open, and that protection came through the music, because the music was very often going the opposite direction of the lyrics. It was very lively. Les Oxalis is nearly a disco song, so very inappropriate to what I'm saying, but that's the way I wanted it. It was, for me, the only possible way.
Well, why don't we hear one of those songs?
Sure.
Let's hear Kate from the new album, Rest. Tell me about that song lyrically. Many of our listeners may not speak French, so could you sort of translate a little bit of some of those lyrics?
It's really a very straightforward addressing my sister, the what I miss, the memory I have of her as a child, and then the darkness that comes, you know, in her life, of course. It's just a portrait of her. But in I think sung in a quite a naive way and a childish way, which was the way I felt when we just recorded that song. That was one of the first recordings we did in New York. I kept going back and trying to record and sing in a different way, in a more forceful way, and we kept going back to that version because it felt... it felt more emotional, maybe.
Well, your sister, Kate, was 4 years older than you.
Yeah.
What role did she play in your life, especially as you grew up, given that you both grew up in the media spotlight in France, given the celebrity of your father, Serge Gainsbourg, and your mother, Jane Birkin?
She was a role model. She was always protecting me because I seemed to be the fragile one. I was always sick. I was always the weak, the one you needed to protect. And that's what she did. And then we had a professional life together too, because she became a photographer quite late. And I always hated having my picture taken. And she made me switch to being her model, making me up, dressing me up, and the way we had done as kids.
As performing... the material from this record, which is very much about grieving and the grieving process and losing people you love dearly or close to you, has it been therapeutic not only performing the songs but also talking about it like you are today, or can it be somewhat burdensome?
Yes, I don't think I like it so much, talking about it, because I feel... I felt that I was... in French, you have the perfect word called impudique, which is when you open up and you maybe show a bit too much. With the album and the lyrics, I had that impression that I opened up very much, and but I wasn't ashamed and I wasn't embarrassed, and I didn't feel that it was putting people in an uncomfortable position. And I needed to say what I sung, but promoting the album is another deal, because suddenly it's trying to sell something, and that is...
It can feel somewhat exploitative.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that I feel more embarrassed about. But anyway, performing the songs, that's a new step for me, and it's a wonderful moment to be able to embrace that, not go into grief and sadness. For me, if the album had ended, it would have been painful. So I'm able to take it a little further and not let go.
Charlotte Gainsbourg's new album is Rest. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
And that'll do it for today. Remember to keep up with us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You'll find us at The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas. Join us back here tomorrow.